Hello everyone and welcome again to the Jobs Podcast. My name is Barry Vickers and thank you for downloading this episode, which today is going to be about the law, or the law as it applies to recruitment. I'd like to remind you the podcast website is at irishjobspod.wordpress.com and you can subscribe to it for free in iTunes and on learnoutloud.com. As ever, I welcome comments, feedback and ideas for future episodes. Please email me at barry@barry.ie or connect with me through LinkedIn. So this week, I'm very pleased to be joined by Claire Michelle Smith, who's an expert in law. Claire is a lecturer in Dublin City University. You're a lecturer in Griffith College University. You are also a lecturer for Boston College, if I'm not mistaken. Boston University, I beg your pardon. You're also a doctoral candidate from Queen's University Belfast, and you recently nominated for the President's Award in Teaching Excellence in DCU, and you've several articles published, and you've also won some public speaking competitions as well. I think you won a InterVarsity Moot once, and you represented Ireland at one of the World Debating competitions. So thank you very much, Claire, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Barry.
So Claire, you're a legal expert, and I suppose workers in Ireland are protected in a number of ways by the law, and it's a good, in that way, it's a good country to come to and work in. So could you maybe outline the architecture of the law in Ireland, particularly in relation to employment and recruitment, and maybe tell us how all those laws interact?
Well, Barry, there are a number of different ways that the laws protect workers in Ireland. Ireland, as you know, is part of the European Union, so the European Union has created a vast amount of law, particularly in relation to employment, which has direct effect in Ireland as being a member state. European Union law is also supreme, so that is the highest level of law that there is in Ireland, and it must be implemented. There's no discretion that the state has for that. So an awful lot of our laws in relation to employment come from EU law. We then have the Constitution, which is the highest form of domestic law in Ireland, and that contains provisions such as the right to earn a livelihood, fair procedures, equality, privacy, etc. So employment contracts, employment relationships must be governed by these provisions. And then there's also national law legislation, which governs various different minute areas.
Okay, and so what are the when you mention national law, EU law, of course, is massive, so don't want to necessarily go into all the EU laws, but can you maybe give us what are the main national laws in Ireland that govern employment and recruitment?
There's a huge list of legislation that governs national law in relation to employment in Ireland, and as I said, they deal with very specific areas. So we have acts such as the Protection of Young Persons Employment Act, the Employment Permits Act, Payment of Wages Act, National Minimum Wage Act, Anti-Discrimination Pay Act, Equal Status Act, Health Safety and Welfare Act, Maternity Protection, Adoptive Leave, Pensions, Minimum Notice in Terms of Employment, Unfair Dismissals, to name just a few.
Great. So, it sounds like there's a lot of protection there. I mean, in a recruitment context, equality is something I'd like to focus on in particular. So could you maybe tell us about equality and maybe I touch upon the 9 grounds which I'm aware of?
The Equal Status Act sets out 9 grounds upon which you cannot be discriminated against. And this applies to the recruitment process as well. So it applies to the selection and to the interview stage. And those 9 grounds are gender, marital status, family status, age, disability, race, sexual orientation, religious belief, or membership of the travelling community.
Very good. It's a list I'm very familiar with in my game. And I suppose it's a unique list to Ireland. I know there's similar lists in other countries. In the States, they have veterans are covered by similar legislation and so on and so forth. So getting that, in the context of recruitment, what are the do's and don'ts? What are the things that employers can ask you or employers can't ask you? Could you give us maybe some questions that, you shouldn't be asked or you can't be asked?
Well, as I said, at the 9 grounds cover you both at the selection and at the interview stage. So you can't be discriminated against on any of those grounds at interview stage. So what that basically means is the potential employer can't ask you questions in relation to your marital status. They can't ask you questions about, particularly if you're a woman, in relation to the ages of your children, if you have any future plans to become pregnant or to have more children. They can't ask you about childcare arrangements, and they're more for women, I suppose, but equally apply to men. They can't ask you about your birthplace or your ancestry. They can't ask you about your sexual orientation, or your religion. And importantly, in relation to disability, they can't ask you if you will be in any way hindered as a result of your disability.
Oh, excellent. Very good. And then in terms of, can I give you a couple of scenarios? I always tell people not to put photographs on their CVs, not because they will be discriminated against, but just because it makes HR people nervous about it. So, I mean, I'd be interested to know if you'd agree. It's my feeling that the rationale is wrong, that you should be able to put photographs in your CVs, but doing so does make HR people particularly skittish and nervous about the possibility of being accused of discriminating because they can see your age, they can see your race, they can see your gender, and so on. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's no legal basis for requiring somebody either to put a photograph on a CV or to require them not to put a photograph on a CV. But it would be advisable not to.
Right. Okay. And the other thing I wanted to explore to you, because it's a point I wanted, I'd like to get across, is in the context of, I'll give you the scenario, if a loud person, if someone who's just behaves and has mannerisms that are quite loud, interviews for a job, and they're clearly the most qualified candidate because they have the best skills, but the employer feels, look, this person isn't going to fit well in my organisation because it's a library or it's somewhere where quiet is, or the other team members are very quiet and so on. So the employer ultimately offers the job to someone who is quieter, but who's maybe not as qualified, but has passed the minimum competency bar for that role. Does that constitute discrimination?
It doesn't constitute discrimination, no.
Okay,
The
because it hasn't fallen the 9 grounds.
exactly, it has to fall within the 9 grounds in order to constitute discrimination. And outside of those 9 grounds, employers do have a duty as well to find the best fit for
Right.
their company, and they can take other things into consideration. Once the person has met the minimum competency, there are issues as to whether or not the person is going to be a good fit.
Right. So just because they have the most experience welding, more experience than someone else, provided they can weld, they can be employed as the welder if they feel that they're going to be a better fit for the team. If it's not
Absolutely.
about my sex, my age, or and so on. Okay, very good, excellent. Okay, and can we maybe talk about, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but maybe talk about equality after the recruitment process, equality in an ongoing scenario. It's my understanding that employers have have to create an environment that's free from equality, not just not discriminate against you directly. Is that correct?
Yes, the obligation on the employers is an ongoing obligation to ensure that there is a workplace that is free from discrimination. So that places a positive obligation on the employers to ensure that there is no discrimination, not only directly from the employer themselves, but also from colleagues.
Understood. So employers have to make sure that the other people that work with you can't discriminate against you, not just that the employer doesn't discriminate against you. Can we talk about bullying and harassment then? Can you tell us about those?
Well, where there is bullying and harassment going on in a work environment, the obligation on the employer is to ensure that there are policies in place that A, that this doesn't happen, and B, that if it does happen, that there are remedies.
Cool, and obviously training as well to make sure it
And
doesn't happen in the first
yes.
place as well. Cool. Okay, another aspect I'd like to talk about because it's a funny area is references. So, where employers ask, can I speak to one of your former managers or supervisors or customers? Can I ask you, first of all, are those regulated? Are those covered by laws or is there certain parameters that have to be observed?
Well, references are regulated by the law. The only obligation that there actually is under the law on the employer is to set out the dates that you worked there. There's no obligation under law for the employer to give you a character reference for the time that you worked there. And the reason for this is that it's possible that there could be direct or indirect discrimination contained within the reference, so there's no obligation to give anything more than the dates of employment.
And that's why some employers I've seen, I suppose, they just give out the dates no matter how good or bad the person was. It's because they're afraid of litigation.
Yeah, there's a potential that if they say something that may be classed as discrimination, either directly or indirectly about the individual, that there's a potential they could have a claim against them for that. So the law doesn't require any more than a confirmation of the dates that the person was employed.
Understood. Okay. The next thing I'd like to ask you about is something a lot of employers do is they'll ask people to attend a pre-employment medical. And I suppose this can be worrying for people, say, for example, if they have a disability. So could you tell me how is it legal for employers to have a pre-employment medical? And how are they regulated?
It is. Employers can make it a condition of employment that you undergo and pass a medical. You can't be discriminated against because of a disability. However, the employer must take all reasonable steps to accommodate you in undergoing this medical. It would take a lot for the screening facility to declare a person unfit for employment. You would have to be virtually incapacitated for you to be declared unfit for work.
Okay, and the scenario I always like to use is, for example, a rigger who has to climb up very high heights if they had perhaps an inner ear infection or an ear issue that they had balance issues, but they might be declared unfit. But it does take a lot. The bar is very high, as I understand.
The bar is very high, but it is also dependent upon the type of work that the person is going to be undergoing and if that particular illness or disability will affect that particular job that the person is going to be doing.
Absolutely. So the test is they have to be fit for the work involved.
Indeed.
Great. Understood. Okay. And then, so they've not been discriminated against in the interview process. They've given the references. References have been checked. They've been offered the job. And now they've been sent a contract of employment. So what should they expect here in a contract of employment? Well, first of all, I believe they're legally obliged to get a contract of employment.
They are they're not legally obliged to get a contract of employment. They're legally obliged to receive written terms of employment. So this is a statement that the employer must give them in writing, which contains certain details about their employment. And it must contain details such as the name and address of the employer, the place of work, the job that they're going to be doing, their job title, their rate of pay, holiday pay, sick pay, grievance procedures, termination clauses, etc. So it's basically the main elements of the contract of employment, and that must be in writing, and they must receive that within 3 months of starting employment.
Oh, so someone can actually start and receive that retrospectively then?
They can, yeah.
Okay.
A contract can be concluded in writing or orally. So your contract of employment can be concluded orally, and that is still a legally binding contract. The terms then must be delivered to them in writing in the statement within 3 months.
Okay.
From the date of commencement.
Understood. And it's regulated in some ways as well. Like, for example, most contracts are roughly about 40 hours in Ireland, and that's because of the Working Time Directive and things like holiday pay is governed as minimum statutories, which are quite good. Irish people are employed roughly 20 days holidays, is that right?
Roughly 20 days holidays, depending. They're calculated in different ways depending on the type of contract that you have. So whether you have a fixed term contract, temporary contract or a permanent contract, they're calculated in slightly different ways. But on average, you will still get around 20 days per year.
Okay, understood. And the reason being that temporary people are still entitled to holidays, even if they haven't worked a full year, they're entitled to pro rata.
And part-time as well would be entitled to a pro rata.
Understood. Okay, so great. Hopefully employers are wise enough to observe their rights, but If they aren't and I want to enforce my rights, is it expensive for me to enforce my rights?
Well, yes and no, it depends, is the answer. It depends on what type of rights you are enforcing. So are you enforcing your right to have a contract? Are you trying to say that you have been discriminated against? Are you trying to say that you've been unfairly dismissed? And depending on what rights you're trying to enforce will depend on the forum in which you're bringing your claim. So if you're bringing your claim to the Rights Commissioner, the Equality Authority or the Employment Appeals Tribunal, they're not particularly expensive in that you're not required to have a solicitor or a barrister represent you. However, if you are trying to enforce a researcher rights in the courts, you will need a solicitor and possibly a barrister as well, and that will become more expensive. So depending on the forum that you're in.
Okay. Well, is it fair to say employers, if they're infringing on your rights, if it's drawn to their attention, they generally rectify it straight away, because in certainly in Ireland, employers in the main like to observe rights, and they break them out of ignorance, and actually they can be litigation shy in that, you know, if you tell them that you feel that there's an issue, if you report to them directly, that they may resolve it there and then, or as quickly as possible, remedy it without having to recourse to those things.
Generally speaking, yeah, and particularly for claims in relation to discrimination or grievances. A lot of the time the employer won't realise that perhaps there is discrimination going on. It may not be coming directly from the employer, and once they're made aware of it, they tend to rectify the situation relatively quickly.
For example, a reasonable accommodation made for someone who's disabled, if it's brought to their attention, they can make it. Otherwise, no, you take a case. Understood. Great. Okay, and then, so if I want to know more about my rights, because we've only covered a very, very high level here, and thank you for that as well. But if I want to know more about my rights as a potential employee, as a candidate who's applying for roles, where can I find out more?
There's a number of different agencies, that you could go to. Perhaps starting with the National Employment Rights Authority or NERA. Their website, employmentrights.ie, has a vast amount of information on employment-related matters. There's also the government-run site, citizensinformation.ie, that contains a fair amount of information as well. And also FLAC. The FLAC website is the Free Legal Advice Centre, and they're an independent body who provide impartial advice in relation to various different matters, one of them as well being employment issues.
Great. Okay, listen, Claire, it's been very interesting, it's been very informative. Thank you very much for taking the time. I've certainly found it interesting and engaging, and I hope the listeners, I hope you have too. It just remains for me to say, I suppose as ever, the podcast address is irishjobspod.wordpress.com. If you have any questions in particular, I'm no legal expert, so I can't really answer legal questions on it. But if anyone wants to contact me with comments or ideas for the podcast, I'm happy to have them. It's barry@barry.ie. And just remains for me to say thank you very much for listening and for downloading the episode. For now, take care. Good luck with your job search.